Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Resiliency Radio with Rick Allen and Lauren Monroe. Interactive radio to empower, educate, and inspire during difficult times. Featuring live interviews with celebrity guests and cutting-edge professionals working in the fields of health, wholeness, and resiliency. This program is brought to you by the Raven Drum Foundation's Veteran Resiliency Project and is dedicated to all our military and their families. For more information, visit us on the web at www.ravendrumfoundation.org. Welcome to Resiliency Radio, everyone. I'm Lauren Monroe. We have a great show tonight. I'm here with my co-host, but tonight it's something unusual. I'm going to be interviewing him personally about his own experience of risk-taking.
What's unusual about that?
Well, we don't normally have this conversation with everyone.
That's true. I'm not normally being interviewed.
No, so it's now. You're in the hot seat.
Hey, hey, hey.
And we're all listening to what you have to say. So risk-taking is a big topic, especially, you know, when we're trying to grow and recover from many different things and just grow in life. So what do you think about that?
I definitely have the experience. I've had some interesting life experiences. So I think I may be able to shed some light on that subject.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking about positive risk-taking here.
Right.
We all know what it's like to take negative risks. I think we've all done it. We may still do it. But positive risk-taking to push yourself forward in order to grow and take risks, in order to challenge yourself, your soul, to be the person you want to be, to recover from damaging circumstances, is a whole other topic, a whole other way of looking at risk-taking. We all can be held back by our mind, by our old patterns.
Saboteur.
Yeah, by our fear. And so this is an important topic to talk about so that we can inspire and get some feedback from you and how you did this. So we're really happy to have everybody here tonight, and we'll be right back with some detail.
Super.
Okay, we're back.
Some of us are back.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you a few questions, and I think everybody listening would want to know, because you have recovered and restored your life in such a tremendous way. Why do you think risk-taking has been such an important part of your life? Why was it important for you to take risks along the way to be where you are right now?
If I didn't take risks, I wouldn't be where I am today. If I hadn't have taken risks early on, sort of in my drumming career, I certainly wouldn't be playing drums with Def Leppard.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that really just launched me in a completely different direction to where my head wanted to go. So I think taking risks has been a really positive force in my life, which sounds odd to say in that context, but I think it's true.
So when's the first time you remember taking a positive, a risk that pushed you, your character, pushed your nature?
Well, when I first started playing drums, it was very safe, and you know, I was playing drums in a sort of a local band. It was actually a few of my best friends, you know, John and Trevor and Dave, and you know, all these kids I grew up with. So it was very safe. But I got really proficient very quick. I could play drums really well. It felt like it was a gift, and as I started to get older, I realized that I had to do something with this gift. Mm-hmm. And I was getting really fed up with playing in local bands, because a lot of the guys that were that I was playing with were a lot older than me, and they were doing it for different reasons. You know, they wanted it for extra spending money, that kind of thing. There wasn't really the level of commitment. You know, as a young kid, I was so hungry, I was so enthusiastic to want to push further, and I hadn't really met the people that could help me do that. And when I met with Joe and Steve, when I first heard about Def Leppard needing a new drummer, Leppard Loses Skins, and we spoke to the journalist that wrote the article in the local newspaper. I got a phone number, met with Joe and Steve a few days later. And it was frightening for me, because I just wanted. I don't think I was really convinced that I was as good as I thought I was, and there was always that doubt. You know, am I good enough to be in an up and coming, a really up and coming band? Mm-hmm. And then when I finally went for the audition, the original drummer showed up, another drummer showed up, and me. So it was just the three of us. So they asked me if I wanted to go first, and I said, no, it's fine, you know, you guys play. And I was sort of quietly calculating and listening to what they were playing, so I could learn the parts as well as I possibly could when it came my time to present myself, as it were. And I did really well. When I played, you know, there were big smiles all over the room. And at that point, I realized that I got the job. But getting to that point was such a fearful process, you know, getting to that point of, you know, actually seeing reaction on other people's faces. Right. I never really expected that, but then when I got that, that was the payoff for all the sort of the anxiety that I went through to get right to that point.
Which you revisited again after your accident in a completely different way.
Yeah, because I'd got somewhat of a reputation, you know. Def Leppard had had major success on first, second, and particularly third and fourth records. And at that point, It was a huge thing to want to throw myself back into being able to play well enough.
So let's go back into your memory and talk about some of the key moments that you had to overcome, you know, fear and, you know, fear of not being good enough, fear of letting people down, those wounds that we have on top of your physical wounds. How How do you remember, you know, really taking that risk when you decided, okay, I'm going to play drums and I'm going to commit to this, and no one I know has really done this before, but I'm going to do it, and, you know, your first time on stage, and let's talk about that. And
okay. When I first came out of this sort of comatose state, you know, having been through this really traumatic event, I didn't really realize what had happened to me, but very quickly I started to see that I really made a mess of myself physically. I wasn't necessarily aware of the mental stuff at that point. But I didn't really want to do it anymore. I didn't want to play. I just wanted to disappear. I felt so exposed. And so afraid to just go out into the world. But at that point, I started receiving thousands upon thousands of letters from all over the world, places that I hadn't even heard of at that point. So the outpouring of love and support I felt from the world at large, you know, quickly tuned me into the amount of support that I was getting from my family and the support that I was getting from the band. And I just went into a different gear. Instead of feeling fearful, I started to move forward simply because of you know, the warmth I felt of the support behind me.
Mm-hmm.
It was really profound, the shift that occurred. And then my brother Robert, he brought my stereo system into the hospital room, and he brought a lot of the music that I grew up listening to, that I was inspired by. And I had this piece of foam at the bottom of the bed to help sort of keep me up, because my right arm was all sort of, you know, bandaged up, and, you know, it was an easier way to kind of keep myself upright. And I realized that I could play all the basic rhythms that I'd always played. I realized that I could play all the basic rhythms that I could always play just using my feet. You know, I could play all the kick and snare parts, you know, to an extent. And my friend Peter Hartley, a guy called Peter Hartley, he came to visit me, and he was very much into electronics, and he saw me doing this thing with my feet while I was listening to music, and he said, I can build you a system, I can build you pedals that'll enable you to play again.
So what about your first time on stage? That must have been really, you know, you've done all this preparation, you're committed, you struggled through learning and the pain. I'm sure there was pain involved in using your body differently and on a number of levels. So you went through all that, and now it's show night, and you're ready to go on, and you realized there's thousands and thousands of people there. This is the big risk. This is the big one.
Yeah, I mean, I felt that, you know, before we played that first Donington show, for sure. But it actually started about a week or 2 weeks earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And we did some small shows in Ireland. small warm-up shows. We did about 4 shows. And while we were rehearsing for the Monsters of Rock tour, Donington being one of the Monsters of Rock shows, we decided to do these warm-up shows. So I asked a guy called Jeff Rich to come and join me on stage, and he had an acoustic drum set up. So it was kind of like a safety net for me. So we shut ourselves away in a rehearsal room in Holland and started running through the songs, and it sounded great. And it was actually a really good choice to take somebody with me because I didn't feel so alone. You know, it was a nice way to sort of... Jeff was like training wheels.
Mm-hmm.
It was a nice way to get through that fear of just being alone and maybe I can't do it or something goes wrong with the electronics or whatever, you know. So we played the first show. And everything went really well, and it was a successful night, and the guys were all really happy, and then we had a day off, and then for the next show that we played, Jeff missed his flight, so we set the stage up as if we were going to play it with 2 drummers, and I played the show, half of the show on my own, and after the show, everybody commented that they didn't even realize the point when Jeff stepped in, which was about halfway through the show. And then we had another show, a third show, and it was this tiny, almost like a pub, and the stage was so tiny that you could only really get 1 drum kit on the stage. So the guys just said, do you want to have a crack at this on your own? And at that point, you know, the fact that I'd got, you know, show 1 and 2 under my belt, I was like, yeah, I'll give it a go. And I remember sitting there and just feeling afraid, you know, of how this was going to go. And then I remember that little voice just saying, you know, just keep it simple. Don't overextend yourself. Just, you know, just keep it simple and you'll be fine. Mm. And that's exactly what I did. I got through the show. It was fantastic. And to me, the show, it seems as though it only lasted about 10 minutes, right. which it showed me that I was in the moment while I was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so after the show, the guys were all happy. Jeff comes up to me and he said, I guess I'll be going home tomorrow, and shook my hand. And that was the beginning of, you know, me doing this whole thing on my own.
Right. I want to get back to that little voice in your head, 'cause I know it has a lot to do with you stepping into the role of being a mentor and being sharing your story with other people, which was a difficult challenge for you too. Do you want to talk about that?
Yes. I'd mentioned earlier in the interview that I obviously started to take care of the physical element, but I never realized the enormity of the mental challenges that I was faced with. And I didn't realize there was anything wrong with me. Either I was in denial or I was an asshole before my accident, and I was just a bigger asshole after my accident. Do you know what I mean?
Are we allowed to say that? Okay.
Yeah, you can say that, I think. No, we can bleep it out. But I started to realize that there were there were things about me that were different. My reaction to certain situations, my fuse was really quite short, and I was just starting to see that there may be issues that I hadn't really dealt with.
How does this relate to taking risks and being a mentor, the way you've stepped out?
I never addressed the mental issues or even realized that there was an issue or a problem until me and you started talking about how we could use my experience and your experience to help other people. And I think at that point, around the time that we really came up with the idea for the foundation for Raven Drum, you started to give me some insight, some language for some of the things that I'd started to experience. And, you know, I just thought that I was, at times I thought I was losing it. But looking back on it, you were able to help me make sense of some of the inexplicable experiences that I was going through.
Let's talk about risk taking and how that was for you at stepping into the place of being a mentor for other people. Did you have any obstacles to overcome doing that? Because, you know, we all go through our own personal transformation. We see ourselves, and it takes a tremendous amount of courage to be able to address what we see. Sometimes we don't like what we see. And then when we have that in our awareness, to step out and actually mentor someone else and share your experience, it's a whole other level of growth and healing that comes with that. And tell me about how you struggled with that and how that was a risk in your life.
Plain and simple, I was afraid to talk about what I'd been through. And I felt I was unable to find the words to describe what I'd been through, let alone, you know, I couldn't even get my head around that my experience could actually help somebody else along, you know, their journey in life. And I remember you saying that, don't worry about it. The language will come. You'll find it. You'll find the words. And then once you find the words and you start to talk to other people, you'll be able to just inspire them, and they'll be able to use it in really positive ways. And I think I really came full circle. You know, I found the language. I'm able to convey. I'm able to talk about my story. And now you guys can't shut me up.
You're right. Well, I think it's so valuable for people who are listening at home to really be aware of this, because having a seat next to you and seeing you go through this transformation and how you share so openly and how you teach and how you got, you know, in the drum circles, in interviews, in gatherings that we have, and sharing your stories with warriors and people who are going through crisis. It's tremendous how much taking the risk to open yourself up, to reach out to another person and share that way, it just triggers a growth response, and how you grow and out of that. And I've seen it in you. And mm-hmm. I just think for everyone to know that if you're going through something where you feel you're coveting it, or you're isolating and you You're afraid to take the risk of sharing and your story. Maybe people won't like you anymore. I mean, people will shun you, maybe. And people will be ashamed of you and all those things. You find the right people to share it with who can use your wisdom, who can lean on you and learn from you, and you'll grow from it. And I've seen that happen with you, and it's just so wonderful.
Well, I think that was the nice thing about finding my feet, finding my words with you. It was safe, and I was able to get some insight into myself. And now, when I'm with a group of people, and I start to show my vulnerability, you know, through my story, the most amazing thing happens, and that is other people start to find their voices. Other people start to tell their stories, and then it becomes a healing experience, not just for them, but it becomes this huge healing experience for me. So it really becomes this two-way street.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah,
and I've seen it recently in all of the places, I would imagine. This wouldn't be one of them, in Las Vegas with you. Let's talk about your leap into the art world and what that was like and how you've magically woven your own life story into presenting this very mystical art to other people and how it's made the impact. I that was a big risk. And like you were just explaining, once you start opening up and sharing, what you see coming back towards you is this wonderful openness and
a reflection.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it is. And so that was an amazing journey. Can you talk about, you know, risk taking and moving yourself away from musician into artist?
It was fantastic to meet with a company like Scene 4. Because they presented this idea, and the process of making the art was wonderful. I loved it. But then came time to present the art to the world, as it were. And that's when my fear kicked in again. You know, it was almost like this feeling of sort of, you know, cutting the umbilical cord between me and Def Leppard and going out on my own and doing something different. I'd only ever known Def Leppard, and, you know, from, you know, the age 15. So to be doing this, it was really daunting at first. How are people going to react to this? Are people going to, you know, take me seriously moving into a new field, a new way of expressing myself? And, you know, I can remember you just saying, you know what, Rick, you've just got to go for it. Just do it. And I really, it was so difficult to get over that hump to really, you know, become comfortable with presenting myself in a different way. But when I did, the most incredible thing happened, and that was, again, that light that people shined back at me, and the love they showed for me and this new way of expressing myself.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So I want to go to the blog question that you answered this past month. And you said if there were three things that you would recommend to help other people take risks for empowerment, you said, firstly, trust your intuition, and then spend less time in your head and more in your heart, and be in the moment. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Whenever I make decisions based on my intellect or what I think about a situation, more often than not, something dark shows up further down the road. Whereas if I go with the feeling I have in my heart and just my intuition, that feeling of I just know this is the right thing to do. When I go with an intuitive feeling or a heart-based sort of feeling, things just flow.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no resistance. And instead of going through all the anxiety of trying to figure it out in my head, if I just go with it, then I find myself in the moment. And when I'm in the moment with anything that I do, I do it to the nth degree. I do it the best I can possibly do it, because I'm doing it without thought. I'm just in it, and I'm enjoying it.
Experiencing it.
I'm experiencing it. Yeah.
So let's get to the question of Viva Hysteria. Let's talk about that, because I think for the many, many people that saw that show, I don't think half of the people really realize how much you went through to prep for that show, to jump into the show. Could you talk about risk-taking and your journey through rehearsals and showtime in Vegas with Viva Hysteria?
I think it was one of the most, initially, the most terrifying things I'd ever embarked upon. These songs that I hadn't played since I was, you know, like 16 and 17 years old, when obviously I had two arms, I started to realize how energetic a lot of these songs were. And
'cause you're old now.
Well, no, it's not about being up. No, I mean, you know, it was difficult enough with two arms,
right?
Because obviously I was pushing myself back then. I was showing off or whatever, you know, and you know, I was full of beans. And now I'm put in this situation where I have to recreate these songs as well as I possibly can using one arm and 2 feet. And not only did I have to learn all these songs, but the amount of time I had to spend on stage was really quite physically challenging. I'm not sure too many people realized, even the people that saw the show, I'm not sure too many people realized that we actually opened up for ourselves. We created this band called Dead Flatbird, and Dead Flatbird were the, you know, the best Def Leppard cover band on the planet. And during Dead Flatbird set, we would play the most obscure songs that, like I say, we hadn't played in, you know, in a very long time. So that in itself was challenging. And then we'd take a 15 or 20 minute break, and then we'd play Hysteria in its entirety. But I think going back to rehearsal and just going through really conditioning my body, and the only way that I can really condition my body when I'm, you know, getting ready for a tour is to play. So I would go in every morning and start playing without the rest of the guys there, just going through these songs, keep going through these songs until my entire being knew these songs as well as I possibly could. And right up to the last moment, I was still tweaking them, trying to perfect them, trying to get them as good as I possibly could. But through that process, I started to feel my body in a way that I hadn't really felt before. Yeah, just a lot of pain and sometimes cramping, which for anybody that does anything physical, cramping is it just kind of kills the whole thing.
Yeah,
right,
it's pretty
there.
Debilitating.
Yeah,
you can't
very,
do anymore.
Yeah, you can't do anymore. So I started to experience that. So, you know, I was trying to take care of myself with obviously with hydration and with supplements and really trying to get a handle on where this was coming from. And, you know, this may be a deeper conversation, but a lot of these songs, I think they were bringing up other aspects. It was almost like a memory of back when I was a teenager, and trying to bring those into the present was quite traumatic. I think it brought up quite a few issues that I maybe had tried to bury. You know, plain hysteria is in itself quite safe. I played a lot of these songs for many years, and obviously at the time when we made Hysteria, you know, I was more mature, and I was able to play in a way that was
holding on to the reins a little bit more.
Yeah. Whereas the older songs were just balls to the wall, you know. I mean, just, you know, you just go for it. 1, 2, 3, 4, and then, you know, you're off. And everybody was racing for the finish line. So the whole process was really process. I've been here in the States too long. Was really telling. It was a story in itself, and I think it helped me get through many things, many fears. But ultimately, the whole experience I think it made me into a better person. I felt very humbled by the whole experience, and I went through a lot of tears, a lot of hardship during rehearsals and, you know, during the early part of Vegas. But the thing that really made it for me was that first night sitting on stage and the reaction, the sheer sort of euphoria that you saw on people's faces when they saw us up there, you know, playing some of these older songs, and then, you know, playing through the whole of Hysteria. The feedback we got from the audience, that was the gift. And at that point, it just started to get easier. And I realized that fight, that journey was worth it.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. I hope everybody out there is listening, and I hope you stay with us, because we're gonna come back and do some drumming together. I think we'll be talking about risk taking, and I think during this drum circle, we'll be focusing on how to remove and unblock obstacles that we have, so that we can take the risks that we need to grow, so we can grow in our souls, in our personality, in our character as people, when we need it to heal. So we'll be right back. Okay, so we're back, and this is the energy medicine piece of this program, and in this section we'll be drumming together with intention, on the premise that vibration, intention, and thought can bring together change, And through this, through subtle energy, through the connection of all of our intentions together with you at home and us here with our drums, we'll be able to assist one another with love and compassion to move through any blockages we may have, any fears we may have about taking a positive risk into the future so we can become better people, we can fulfill our own purpose in our world, we can be stronger, more empowered, more healthy. And so the reason why we bring the drums into this moment for everyone is that so that we can rest our minds, allow our bodies to rest, and be more present in our hearts so we can be in the moment and receive any information that may be available to us. So take a moment now. If you don't have a drum, you can just rest and listen and be a part of this as a meditation. But allow right now your body to be rested and have weight. Allow your feet to be flat on the floor or allow yourself to rest lying down. And breathe deeply in through your nose and out through your mouth. In through your nose and out through your mouth. And take a moment to present in your own mind any obstacles that you feel are preventing you from moving forward and taking a risk. And just see them as a word or as energy. You may feel them in your body. It may be a place in your body that's preventing you from moving forward. And as we drum together, I want you to visualize this and visualize any light or color or use your breath going to that area in order to lift it, transform it, transmute it. And together in our consciousness, in our awareness, let's hold the space for all of us to receive this type of healing, this type of blessing as we drum together. Breathe. breathe, be in silence. And take a moment to be in gratitude. To be thankful for the moment. How are you doing, Rick?
I'm doing okay.
Well, thanks everybody for joining us tonight. We hope that this part of the show can really give you time to reflect and to rest and to anchor into your own body and your life ideas and thoughts and inspirations that may benefit you in becoming an empowered and resilient person. So we have a chat coming up. If you guys want to come and join us. I think it's going to be you, Rick. I think you're the man with the plan on the chat. It's going to be on the 30th, on Monday, September 30th.
What's happening? Are we running out of friends?
What do you mean? No. I mean, you're in demand.
Well, you know, that is a huge compliment. It's a huge compliment that I can get to share
some of myself and some of the things that are going on in my life.
So for those of you who want to log on, go to ravendrumfoundation.org and you can join, get online to the community there, and we'll be having the chat with Rick at 5 o'clock Pacific time, and we'd love to see you there.
Super.
Thanks so much, everyone. Have a good night.
All right, bye-bye.